Hello, everyone. My name is Kaz.
This is Medibot.
And this is episode 58 of the Skulls Cast, wherein Medibot and myself will talk about Charles Barkley Shut Up and Jam.
Gaiden. Chapter 1 of the Hoops Barkley saga.
Damn right. But before we get to that, we have more listener questions in a segment we call The Skulls Asked.
Yes. Things okay, have been asked, and we what are answering them.
So this one comes from Slyonine, who asks, do you participate in much higher level Magic events, such as Grand Prix, Star City Opens, or PTQ events? Any experiences worth sharing if you have?
I haven't, because I'm a massive scrub lord who can't even, like, win a draft.
No, you're...
Except for that one time.
You haven't, because... Well, there are limited versions of those. Just, it's really hard to get to any. And the last time that I went to one, it was because it was right nearby.
Yeah.
Like and in fact, it was the largest tournament that's ever been held in North America.
Mm.
At weighing in at something like 1,900 people.
Mm.
We went 9 total rounds, and I finished 6-3. Which was just out of the, like, day 2 finish.
Yeah.
That was standard for Rise of the Eldrazi. Like, that was... Yeah, Rise had just come out.
Yeah.
And I had a deck that used big Eldrazi monsters.
Summoned Emrakul the Aeon's Torn.
Yeah, and that was a pretty wonderful experience. This was, like, in... the summer before the fall where, like, Eldrazi Ramp was a deck in Standard. It kind of became a real thing after I had played it at that tournament. And I imagine other people had done this too, because it's like, oh, look, all of these excellent ramp spells and huge Eldrazi monsters. My angle was kind of a wall angle because of Overgrown Battlement. So I had green and white. White for removal spells and other better walls like Wall of Omens and Wall of Reverence.
Yeah, those are both very, very quality walls.
Wall of Reverence was this just soul-crushing thing where I could have turns where I just, like, have my walls out and say, okay, I cast Kozilek, I draw 4 cards, I gain 24 life past you. You know, because I had the 2 Walls of Reverence down. And it's just like, okay, what are you doing to come back from that opponent? And I would just ask these impossible questions. There was one guy who killed all of my lands with a Johnny's Ultimate, and I was still drawing live because I had 8 mana on the board. And so I'm like...
Yeah, with your battlements.
Yeah, 2 Overgrown Battlements and 2 other walls. And so I was also holding off his whole, like, team and drawing live. And I'm like, okay, a Johnny's Ultimate, whatever. But that was rad and a whole lot of fun. But it took a lot of prep time.
Mm.
Like, that's the thing. This was a tournament that I could literally walk to. That's how close it was to my own house. And once I saw that, I was like, oh man, I have to go to this thing. And I did, and I prepared for it, and I built the deck, and I tested the deck, and went through a couple of iterations. And then the final product was what I took to that tournament. I saw Louis Scott Vargas and one of the other Channel Fireball dudes there.
PV?
Webb.
Okay.
They just call him Webb, but I can't remember his full name. Ah, whatever. Yeah, they were just, like, walking in. Because apparently it's an acceptable thing to fly around the country to, like, go to these.
And that's something I've...
That's something I've never understood.
But some people have, like, sponsorships.
It's apparently what is expected of, like, serious high-level players, or at least...
absolute horseshit,
they expect it of themselves. But yeah, if the whole system went away, then I wouldn't bat an eye. And I imagine that Magic itself would also survive. There's this persistent fiction... both in the world of high-level Magic players and the adjoining world of the tournament organizers for these events, that says we need to run these events so that Magic has a prestige to it for players to aspire to, and that it is worthwhile to run these because of that prestige and because they get a bigger return on their investment for running them that way. I believe that is horseshit, especially with how the tournaments are actually run and what it entails to go to one. The work is basically all on you if you're not on their, like, gravy train, as they call it. That's a whole topic for another time. I hate the whole thing, but that was my one, like, glorious experience in a higher level Magic event. I don't think I'm really going to go to any more.
No, I mean...
not unless it's, again, right next door, and I'm right, like, oh, you. Man.
It'd have to be a limited format that I feel really confident about. Because I basically have no idea how to play Constructed Magic.
We just get you trained up a bit. That's all.
Probably. I'll build one of those stupid bone decks and just win because sometimes bone wins.
Yeah, because the deck plays itself and you just have to keep acceptable opening hands,
like,
and
do a ton of math
mulligan
ahead
intelligently.
Of time to figure out, you know, the ratios of everything and when to mull and all of that, and then just ride the law of averages to top 8.
Yeah.
That's not entirely fair to Legacy Boon, because that actually does have to sometimes make interesting decisions. Or at least from, like, specific game reports I've read, it does sometimes make interesting decisions. What I'm saying is, don't play blue. Thank you for asking that question, Slyanine.
Indeed. And we usually do two questions, and today is no different. So this next one comes from Alan Aswidity, who asks, Skulls casters, what are your opinions on video games such as Dark Souls, wherein the draw is the gameplay, but there is optional lore that fleshes out the world in which we run around killing things?
Okay. I've played Dark Souls once, and I quit around 8 minutes in because it really pissed me off.
That's not even vaguely answering the question.
So, what do I think about a world where... I don't know, I didn't get to any of the lore. Yeah, I'm focusing too much on
the
Dark
Souls. You're answering a question
again
other
so
than the one asked.
It, but don't say the word Dark Souls. So
okay, fine. What is your opinion, Medibot, on video games where the draw is the gameplay, but there is optional lore that fleshes out the world in which we run around killing things?
Okay.
How about
if the
that?
Lore is interesting, then, like, that becomes part of what you're sort of actively seeking out in the course of playing the game. When I played Metroid Prime, I fucking scanned everything because I wanted to know what it said. You are not required to scan everything, but I wanted to know about the
things. There's a lot that you scan in that doesn't even count for, like, your scan percentage or whatever. And it's still cool.
It's cool, and it's great, and it helps build up this world that you're running around in and, you know, shooting monsters and finding ancient ruins meticulously built by the Chozo.
I mean, I really think that this is the ideal way to have text in your game at all.
Yeah, sort of the...
You know, the text should exist in the game because the game world is a place where books exist, and people create and read them, and they have germane things to say or talk about. You know, these messages are left behind by people who are talking to others, and they have information that they need to share. There's a purpose to it. The same way that anything in a game should have a purpose. So we have this world where we can presume purposes for Persona within it. And, you know, any dialogue between characters should serve some purpose to the plot. And extra stuff is no different. So that's that. It's a great thing. Very few games actually do this. Most of them want to, like, front-load their text. Mm-hmm. Or they publish...
They want a cutscene with people babble at each other. And then
publish entire encyclopedia articles about everything. You know what the other thing about Dark Souls and Metroid Prime was with their extra dialogue? It was all brief.
Yeah.
You know, you got like a snippet paragraph of it at a time. It wasn't freaking Mass Effect with a library of all of the history of these planets and the people from these planets and the spacefaring people and all that.
There was a rich, intricate, and ultimately very boring history to everything you encounter.
Much like real life.
Yeah.
In the real world. And, this over-focus
on realism.
Yeah.
To unfun situation.
Like, I never mistook a science team for a real thing. I didn't think I was going to, like, look under my bed and find a space pirate there.
Hello.
But they stuck with me, and their images carry on in my imagination, and I have a reasonable expectation of being able to imagine how they would react given other situations because they are better characterized.
We need a sample.
They are more vibrant and vivid because they're not as realistic.
this cartoonish entity in some ways.
Yeah, where especially, like, in the text.
Here comes science
team.
Doop, doop, doop. And then, you know, something explodes. And science team. And then roll credits.
All the little snippets that you find from Science Team so much without saying very much. You know, that's...
Maybe I just really like Science Team a lot. I identify a lot with Science Team.
Well, they were trying to get things done. And so should we. So let's move on to the topic of tonight.
Okay.
Which is Charles Barkley's Shut Up and Jam Gaiden, Chapter 1 of the Hoops Barkley Saga. This is a independent video game made in RPG Maker.
Game Maker.
Game Maker? That's more impressive than a little back in, like, 2007.
Yeah.
And I hadn't heard of it until last week, or if I had, I had just brushed it off. I'm like, well, what is that nonsense? Brush, whatever.
What indeed is that nonsense?
But we played through it.
Yeah.
Which is to say, you can watch the stream on Kung Fu Jesus' Twitch channel. Mm. He also uploaded it to his YouTube, so that's it's all there. You can watch that.
Just as a warning, it may be erotic for child.
That doesn't happen until the second half, though. So you're safe up through the first half of that. But you might hear me being a little drunk and laughing my head off.
Mm.
At different times.
It is a very funny game. In many ways.
There's just a whole hell of a lot that it does right.
Yes.
It's an RPG in the just classic sense. So, looking at it, it looks and plays like a Super Nintendo RPG. Mm. You know, you're on the right, enemies are on the left, you have information at the bottom, you select attacks, you target things, numbers pop out. That kind of stuff.
Yeah. All very familiar elements for this.
Yeah.
This
so
time
if you had,
and genre.
So if you'd played a lot of stuff around the time of Final Fantasy VI, this would feel like really familiar. And in fact, for me specifically, it felt really familiar because they had lifted a lot of the sprites from games that I had played, and so I'm constantly saying, "Ooh, I recognize that tile."
Yeah.
That tile's from Secret of Evermore. Yeah. That one is from Lufia 2, I think. And this one, that one happened in Chrono Trigger. That one, yeah. So all that, it all gets, like, used and reused.
Yeah.
The characters themselves have, I don't know, there's some kind of inconsistency with their sprite style. Like, Charles himself looks a certain way, his sprite looks a certain way, and then the others have sprites that are, like, partially lifted from other games.
Yeah,
and so they have a definitely different style to them, both in battle and on the overworld. Same with their, I guess, portraits within the game menu. Yeah. But as you might imagine,
assets are outright stolen.
I say that, but I'm not trying to, like, put them down for not making their own stuff or anything. That was very intentional, and there's no doubt in my mind that the people who made this had the resources to draw their own stuff if they really wanted to.
Yes.
This is an intentional use of other stuff.
Yes.
Both to give us that familiarity that, you know, we would be really lost without, by the way, in this crazy world of Neo New York that they're running around, and to kind of poke fun at the kind of stuff that was going on in the RPG community at the time. I mean, in 2007, I met one of these people, by the way. I didn't know it until afterward. Mm-hmm. But someone who was, like, within this community of RPGs, and basically, Final Fantasy VI was the most perfectest thing ever, and anything that you could do to make your game exactly like that but different was, like, what you did. Like, right down to styling all of your stuff after them, all of the little, like, sprites and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
So it only struck me as funny later, you know, when I found this thing, that I remember, I'm like, oh yeah, that guy. I remember that guy now. And, you know, he sure enough, back around 2007, he was working on ripping sprites from stuff. I even passed him a sprite sheet that I had found once.
Dank because, illegal sprite sheets.
Yeah, I guess. I didn't even realize what I had done. It pokes fun at the community in other ways. The save points, which look like nothing at all. I mean, they look like a circle with a little thing sort of popping on the bottom of it.
See, to me, I immediately looked at that and saw a gasoline pump.
Even now, from any angle, it doesn't look like that, though. Because it's like the wrong shape of funnel for that, and the wrong color. Also, it's not connected to anything. Doesn't really have a hose.
Disembodied gas pump.
Gas pumps do not have bodies, so they can't be
the station.
Disembodied.
That's the body.
The station is not a body.
You My do not station is body.
You don't grow like a... I am going to lay an egg, and that egg will hatch into a gas station. This is how the gas station body is made.
Okay. I'm glad we agree.
Then, and only then, will I agree that that save point sprite looks like anything. I still don't know what it looks like. I've seen it from every angle, and I don't really know what it's supposed to be. Point is, it is a save point, yeah. And it talks to you.
Yeah. For a while.
This was charming at first, but very quickly became annoying, because all of them were really crappy posts that someone had made in their little forums that they have. Just slightly touched up to have, like, bits of the in-game jargon inserted into the people's posts.
VidCons.
For VidCons. What other jargon do they have? The game itself has a lot of clever jargon words.
Zaubers.
Ah, yes, Zaubers for magic.
Vitality points and Balu points.
Yeah. I want to say that the game mentions the word basketball directly only twice, and only in the intro.
Yeah. Well, there's also an item.
Are you sure?
Yeah, you can. There's an well, it might be called B-ball.
Right, and that's sort of what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Is that like everywhere else it's B-ball? Yeah. People say B-ball. Items are called B-ball. This or that. And I almost wanted the whole game to not have the word basketball at all in it as a kind of further...
Yeah, like, I'm remembering one instance in, like, the opening monologue. Soliloquy? I guess it's a soliloquy.
We'll call it a soliloquy for now. It's a very sad Charles Barkley talking about what happened to the world and B-ball. But yeah, he says basketball there and twice.
Yeah.
The game is like that's voiced.
To understand what's going on in the game, you have to understand this takes place some number of years after the events of the film Space Jam.
Indeed.
And a lot of elements from Space Jam are important in Charles Barkley Shut Up and Jam Guide in Chapter 1 of the Hoops Barkley Saga.
I take it that the plot of Space Jam, and this is kind of pieced together from my own hazy recollections of watching the movie when I was a lad, and from the events of the game itself, involved the Monstars stealing, like, B-ball energy from the greatest ball players, except for Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
And then Michael Jordan teamed up with the Looney Tunes to beat them at basketball to get the energy of their friends back.
Yes.
Including one Charles Barkley.
Yes, Charles Barkley was partially trapped in the B-ball during the Space Jam.
All right. That makes this game make more sense.
Yeah. And some other things happened. But this game is canon within a...
It even warns you at the beginning.
Story
That's line. Really charming.
So there's sort of like, you know, it very much does exist as sort of in parts, it is a reaction to the RPG Maker community at the time. But I feel like it's sort of making fun of RPGs by being a good, short, and fast RPG, which are three words that I would not normally associate with that genre.
Yeah. I mean, compare this to, say, I don't know, the paroxysmal disaster that is Final Fantasy XIII-2.
Which is bad, long, and tedious.
Yeah, and largely plays itself and... Yeah. Doesn't really require your input, and even though in that sense it would be a movie, it goes on way too long, the plot doesn't make sense, the characters aren't interesting, we're not invested in them, it fails at everything it's trying to be. Charles Barkley Shut Up and Jam is like so better than that in every single way. That's the true subversion. That's the Tao of what they have done.
Yeah.
Is that it's not, you know, you can make a joke and make a little game that, okay, haha, this is a parody, and it takes all of, like, two scenes and 15 minutes to build or whatever, and that would be a complete parody of something. But this is, in addition to a complete parody, also a complete game.
Yes.
It's not like they... made this little intro, and then, you know, you got into one fight, and it's like, oh, haha, you're throwing basketballs as an attack, and that's funny, and there you go, the fin, you know, end, and that could be, that itself could also be a complete parody, but the game itself goes on from there, and it's actually, yes, it is 100% a game, where it has all the same stuff that you expect of RPGs.
Mm.
Like, gaining levels, figuring out enemy attacks, buffs and debuffs, status conditions, and ways to subvert or repair them.
The battle system in this game is really good. I'm going to go ahead and say that. I think it is an actually quite good battle system. Each of your characters has a pretty decent variety of things they can do without expending any resource, the resource in this game being baller points. And just everyone has baller points. They are consumed when you perform certain special attacks. But just to give an example, Charles Barkley can, without spending any resource points, use his turn to do the following. He can make two free throw attacks. He can make one pass attack. He can do a fadeaway, forward, or standing jump shot. These are all different and have different rules and purposes and reasons to choose these actions.
Yeah. I think we only did a pass once, and I
passing is has a very challenging timing requirement, and is therefore, you know, if you can't get that pretty quick, you're going to be whiffing a lot of attacks, and so you can avoid it. But if you can do it well, you're going to be just cranking out damage.
So it's the so that one is the standing jump shot, but a better or more challenging.
Yeah, the timing for it is pretty strict, and if you mess up, you get a miss. But on a hit, you'll be doing even more damage than a forward jumper without the guard penalty.
Hmm. So yeah, there's all that.
There's all that, you know? And then you level up, and you get like a bunch of weird special stuff, and all of those are pretty interesting. Usually there's something wacky going on. Some of them are, you know, just spend resource, get more damage, but some of them are, you know, spend resource, get stuff.
Yeah, a lot of the attacks that you can do have multiple hits.
Yes.
And it's important to decide when to do the single big hit versus the many little hits.
Yes.
And there are reasons to do either of those. And that's your chief trade-off and management angle from how to succeed at this game.
Mm.
And that's different for every character. I think they're a little too free with the consumable items and money. Like, we just had so much of that.
It's
and
true.
I
feel like
in genuine danger.
Right, because the restorative items are percentage based. You know, they restore a percentage of your maximum health or vitality points or baller points. Unlike, say, your typical Final Fantasy, which assigns a pretty hard and fast number, which means that right away, the game offers you things that restore, you know, either 33 or 66% of your vitality points. And, you know, those items stay relevant and good for the whole game.
Just yeah.
Being able to restore, you know, that much of your health in one turn is pretty great.
And this is that's not a trivial thing to put in your game and to manage well.
Mm.
See, that's why I think that it felt like they're too many. It might just be because, you know, we were just consistently making really good choices in every battle, and so we didn't need that stuff all that much.
Well, I do get the feeling that the game is not intended to be exceptionally challenging.
Yeah, there's that too.
Even though in some places there were battles where, you know, again, you know, we, because the battle system presents you with enough information to strategize, you know, right off the bat, we started making good decisions very quickly. It might just have seemed not terribly challenging because we just made correct strategic decisions most to all of the time.
Yeah, had a lot of oversight.
We had a team strategizing about this.
Yeah.
Four of us together were smart.
You know,
enough
and
to
towards the
game.
End, I tried to shut my mouth whenever I wanted him to do something, because I'm like, oh man, he'll do it. Of course, a little bit of that is necessary because he gets kind of tired as he goes on.
Mm.
So. Kind of have to, and he'll forget where he is in the menu. Yeah. He's like, no, just hit him. Your target has, like, 2 hit points left or whatever.
Do an attack just do, and win the game.
Do any attack.
Do a move that deals damage.
Yeah. So they're pretty free with items. They're not very free with inns, which is perhaps the reason that they're free with items. And
yeah, I guess there,
it's also
to...
hard to tell like what an inn is because there's not a uniform look
right.
to them. It's
you,
just like
you,
oh
you
that
talk
dude.
To someone and they're like, hey, want to spend the night?
Yeah, rest here.
And you're like, whoa, and then you're like, oh, you mean like that?
Yeah, I mean this is Neo New York.
Yeah.
But that's an irrelevant complaint. It's not a problem
that's
the inn is
that is a point on the slider that they chose, and I think it's still within acceptable bounds.
It's very linear.
It is pretty linear. There is
there are a couple of places where you can.
There's that one completely optional thing that you chose to do.
Yeah, you can. You get like one or two path decisions somewhere, but you know you ultimately arrive at the same place in the same set pieces, fighting most of the same stuff. And that's one of its strengths too. Mm. You know, it's got a story to tell, wacky as that is, and it's gonna do it, and you'll be part of it, and you'll love it.
Yes,
because it's also it's very satisfying. A lot of really satisfactory stuff happens throughout the... And it's also a really well-staged drama. Like, you have established facts and then payoffs for the facts that they have established. It's just... It's mind-blowing to think back at this and say, wow, this is so credible and valid for... Like, every time I look at it in a different way, and,
yep.
like, I just can't say enough good shit about this game.
Soundtrack is great.
Soundtrack's really good. There are one or two places where I would either change the music or simply turn it down or just have, like, another track kick up, but that's the exception and not the rule. In the places where the soundtrack was merely adequate, you didn't notice it, and that's fine, because it's just, like, background or whatever. And in the couple of places where it was absolutely excellent, there it was, and in your face, and perfect.
And I got up off the couch and just powered up.
Yeah, it has a good main theme. They used that in a couple of places. For serious fights, for like the double boss music,
yeah,
they used Eternity from Blue Dragon.
Yeah,
and
Deep Purple sang that. What the hell?
And I still laugh whenever that happens. You should really go back and watch the stream. Because the first time that music kicks up, I am not expecting it at all, and I started rolling on the floor and laughing my ass off.
Just
I was
could not
done.
Deal with the reality around
I couldn't,
you.
I was finished. I'm like, oh man. So let's get into why this is so much better than other shit that we see for basically. No reason.
Okay, so
right?
why do we say it's such a good game?
I'd like to point at craftsmanship, or just craft, if you want to take the man out of that, which I don't care for one way or the other. So I can refer to it as craft or shipwriting.
Yes.
There's a great deal of authorial intent. They're trying to do something and they accomplish it. This is really important with any kind of work that you're making. If our friend Ren LeVay, for instance, he refuses to see a movie not if it's bad, but if it fails at what it's trying to do. So when I told him that X-Men First Class was a good movie that was trying to be a great movie, he said, ah, I know all I need to now. I'm not going to see that piece of shit then. And, you know, and that's what it was. It was trying to be something as cool as and powerful as the Avengers, but it ultimately was this quirky kind of personal drama and interesting for that, and I liked it for that. Mm. So Charles Barkley, Shut Up and Jam accomplishes what it set out to do.
Everything that makes is exactly it good. As it was meant to be.
Yeah, and that really comes through from every screen, from every battle, every enemy, the names of the enemies, the names of the items, the dialogue of the NPCs that they tell you, the side characters, the recurring NPCs like Juana Mann, and was there another? I'm trying to think of another person that was there multiple times.
Larry Bird comes up a few times.
Yeah, okay, Larry Bird, sure. He counts. It's like a supporting cast, I guess. They're all perfect. It really puts a good like story level meta parody on all RPGs too, because you can take the special words or the jargon words out of what people are talking about and insert other ones, and suddenly you get the plot from Final Fantasy XII or from Terranigma or any of these other games. It's just that those are usually the place where they insert their like fantasy made up words, right?
Yeah.
But instead of those fantasy made up words, they have some that are familiar to us, like basketball and diabetes and glaucoma and Zaubers.
I wasn't too familiar with that word before this game.
That's fair. Neither was I at all. I had to be told that it was the German word for magic.
Zauber.
But you get what I'm saying, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if you come up with like deifacted nethicite or whatever, I'm not going to know what that is or have any context for what it's supposed to be and do. Neither do I have any context for manufactured jamicite, but since I know that it relates to slamming and jamming, I do have a context for that, albeit a wacky one.
Yeah, it is a wacky, but it follows.
Yeah.
Jamicite, useful in jamming. We're doing something related to that. Okay, so yes, that is important. It's very it's a very consistent game.
Yeah, really. It never, you know, there's really a time where a movie can, or a game too, can kind of like look aside and wink at the audience a little bit, but it never does that. There's never an outright, well, okay, maybe the save points, but we stopped reading those, so. Just, it keeps pace. The pacing is good too, in a different sense.
Yeah, having non-random battles helps this a lot, I feel.
Yeah, and that also helps them design it
without
having to. That you no longer have to play with percentages and draw up like case scenarios for like the various kinds of things that your player could possibly have and the likelihood of them having them at a certain point. But rather, you can just strictly say, okay, they can have this because there's been this much stuff, and put, like, build up your limits that way and design your encounters that way, because it's like, oh, they've gone through these 23 encounters to get to here, so they're going to have this much power because of this experience bound and all that. Mm. So, yeah, the non-random encounters helps.
Jeez. Also, just, like, pretty low total number of fights in the game, I feel like.
Yeah, for what it is. It never felt like we were fighting too much. You know?
Yeah, you like, every Yeah.
Up to a point, it almost felt like we were reading too much, except it kept paying off with more just really funny stuff every single time.
It was worthwhile reading.
You have all of these characters who are so just dead serious about what they're talking about, and one of them was in a tragic accident, and his skin is now that of a b-ball.
Yes.
And so he has b-ball skin, and he is a dwarf.
From space. He is the cyber dwarf.
From space.
From space.
And they're just really consistent and all... Yeah. There are even a couple of little touches as, like, nods to other kinds of games and other genres of games. Like, you go through a brief dating sim side quest if you choose. There is a... Oh, what was the other thing? There were a couple of puzzles.
Mm.
Not too much. They were pretty well staged and well contained. There's one other straight up, like, this is a nod to genre of game, but I'm forgetting what it is.
Oh, when you're on a Liberty Island.
Oh, the adventure game
thing.
Okay,
where you can examine, use, take, or leave anything. It's tremendously silly.
This is the meaning of liberty.
Yes. And,
I can't use that rope. It has 13 knots in it. I will tie a knot in that rope. Now it is a rope with 14 knots.
And,
and they had a couple nods, a couple little nods to actual games, like when you looked in like one briefcase or something, like we're running through a factory and trying to find a thing, you just had to find it, and one of the cabinets that could have had the thing instead had zero nothings inside it, and that itself is a little nod to Blue Dragon again. Because throughout that game, there's a whole lot of shit that you can examine. And if it has something in it, it shows that there's like a little word that pops out of the chest or the rock or whatever, right? And it is the word of the item that you got.
Mm.
But if there's nothing there, then the word nothing pops out. And there is an insane man who lives under a bridge that you meet later who tells you that the world is full of nothings, and he tells you how many nothings you have found, and he will reward you for finding more. This is an incentive to go and find and click on everything.
Click on everything.
Which I had been doing up to that point, so it felt like a good reward, and I was like, oh yay, cool! And that, in Charles Barkley, was a nod to the thing in Blue Dragon, so... That was pretty special for me personally, because I have played Blue Dragon. But that is also a silly game, but I think that it also accomplishes what it set out to be and do. So I kind of like it for that.
What else can we say? You know, good. The combat is good. The things that the characters say to each other are good. The things that you read about are good. The sounds that come out of your computer are usually pretty good.
Yeah. Even the menu shifting noises are the kinds that you would have from a basketball game of the time, like NBA Jam.
I would not be surprised if they were lifted from NBA Jam.
Yeah, probably. It sounded like the dribble noise or the pass noise.
Nothing happens in this game that just really outright wastes your time or is bullshit or insults you or punishes you for, you know, playing the game. The game respects the player a lot. The game wants you to have a good time.
Yeah.
The game wants you to have a good time and has made, you know, reasonably intelligently, it probably will make you have a good time.
You want to know the only bad thing about this game that I just thought of?
The only bad thing
about the game is that it kind of makes me want to go watch Space Jam again.
I consider this a positive.
Well, okay.
So it averages out to neutral. Neutral a lot, feature will a lot make of good you want to watch Space Jam.
A lot of good stuff. One neutral thing, and that's Charles Barkley, Shut Up and Jam. The last thing that we'll mention about this is that the reason that we had played this game at all was because there's a Kickstarter going on right now for the sequel to it. The people who made this called Tales of Games.
Yes, Tales with an apostrophe.
Oh no, like the guns that Hoops Barkley uses.
Oh no, games with an apostrophe, my bad. But yeah, there's a Kickstarter going for the Magical Realms of Tir na n'og, Escape from Necron 7, Revenge of Cuculain, the official game of the movie Chapter 2 of the Hoops Barkley saga.
Yes, and it's the sequel, and you get very excellent things for the, like, tier amounts that they have, and it's really good. They're worthy of it. If ever there was a worthy Kickstarter, it was this.
Give these people your money and they'll make a computer game, and it's probably going to be really good.
Looked like a lot of their others were good, too. I kind of want to find those.
Yeah, the other Tales of Games. One of the Kickstarter awards is getting the Tales of Games' VidCon pack. So if you're into that, you can get that. This is a game for true Doom murder heads.
This is a game for true skulls.
Skulls.